Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. This is truly an epic event that is raising awareness and revealing just how much is happening in the world of embodiment. And this gives me hope about where we're heading as a people. I'm Amara Pagano. I'm the founder of Azul, a conscious movement path of personal transformation. I work with the body and the power of movement to awaken love and consciousness. Embodiment is a key to my work. And the journey of embodying the map of Azul is what facilitates the process of self-realization. I'm excited to sponsor the Dance and Creativity Channel to share my love of movement and to celebrate the power that it has to serve our collective evolution. If you are interested in awakening your deepest potential or curious about the spiritual and healing aspects of embodiment, I encourage you to check out Azul. Everyone is welcome. I work with people who love movement and people who have never moved. Follow the link and you'll find three gifts for you: a 50-minute Azul journey, a special discount on our online embodiment training, and a free month in our upcoming membership program. So come, check out the Path of Azul. I'll be presenting on the main stage here and in the Dance and Creativity Channel, and I hope to see you there. For now, enjoy the richness of the presentation you're about to see.
We are welcoming David Mooney. He will lead us through the session, A Way to Creativity. David is a teacher of movement medicine, conscious dance, and mindful movement practice. He's from Ireland. And David has been teaching for 8 years and has been dancing various forms of conscious dance practices for the past 12 years. So welcome, David. Word to you.
And thank you, Antonina. Thank you so much. Thank you for the epic work you're doing. It's quite full on, I'd say, online for I don't know how many hours a day. So a massive thank you to you and to Anna and the whole team for your amazing work to make this happen, particularly in these times where we can't be together as much. So this way of connecting is really, it's good, isn't it? It's gold. So thank you for all your work. And I hope you do get time in nature as well after this, really. Hopefully this will be a little inspiring for that. So hello, everyone. Really great to see you all. Hey, Anton and Tandy and Monica and Kimberly, Jane and Anne and those of you who can see and all of you guys that are here that are not visual but also here with us in heart. Really, really welcome to you all and delighted to be here with you. And I'm going to take a little time to share with you some of my experiences of connection with nature through the practice of movement medicine and some other practices that I'm connected to. I've been very, very lucky, very fortunate to spend time in Canada with the Lakota peoples and to learn a little bit of their practices. And I'm in a relationship of reciprocity with the particular tribe that I'm connected to over there. So delighted to share some experiences of the Celtic perspectives, just little nuggets from the Celtic's perspective of connecting with nature. So this is very much, just to say, first of all, what I'm going to share with you is nothing new. It's nothing new in the sense that this way of connecting with nature and this way of being with the medicine of nature and this way of nature informing our health, nature informing our mental health, our nervous system health, our biological health, our gut health, and our embodied health. This is something that we've been doing for thousands of years, and Indigenous peoples have been holding this wisdom for many, many millennia of generations. And I guess what I'm offering today is from the neuroscience perspective, from certain research, contemporary research in terms of somatic experience, in terms of various ways of analyzing the impact of being in relationship and connection with nature in a conscious way that has on our heart and our nervous system, on our overall health. So this lens a perspective of what I guess is quite valued in these times is the scientific and the tools of science to remind us of what we've known for thousands and thousands of years that we've been disconnected from in the last few generations. So what I'll do is I'll talk a little about the just some interesting perspectives on our relationship with nature and why this might be of benefit to you, why this might be of benefit to us, why this might be of benefit to the neurological and physiological state of well-being. I'll talk a little bit about what the polyvagal nervous system is and why this is relevant for this particular conversation. There'll be little nuggets about neuroscience and the relationality between our mind and how our thinking works when we are immersed in nature or have a conscious connection with nature, whether that's through the imagination or actually being going for a walk in the forest, for example. And then we'll have about a 10-minute immersive experience of this through the practice of movement medicine. So when we do this, this could be, you could be sitting down, you could be standing up, you could be moving around. So this is really a practice to get a flavor of movement medicine, particularly from the frame of connecting with the elements, connecting with the natural world. So this will hopefully give you a different way of experiencing the medicine of being connected with nature. So thank you for the introduction, Antonina. So yes, David Mooney is my name, live in Ireland, and I've been really very, very interested in nature and trees since I was very, very young. And in my early 20s, I got very interested in my own recovery from years of being disconnected in lots of different ways, of being very much in the mind and very much using the mind as a survival mechanism for places within myself that felt overwhelming or disconnected in the heart, in the body. So I was carrying a lot, as we can do, carrying a lot in the body. And this was epigenetic trauma. This was trauma in my own family field. And one way of coping with that was going way up into the mind and trying to work things out, as some of you may know that can be a survival mechanism. So I was very disconnected from my own body. And this got me very interested in various forms of psychotherapy and this deep journey with recovery, my own reconnection, my own healing of my own nervous system, and coming into relationship with, first of all, coming into relationship with the disconnection that I felt with life, that I felt with others, that I felt with myself. So this healing process, of course, as we all know, is ongoing and lifelong and intergenerational. And I was very lucky to find my way to very, very good somatic psychotherapy training in my early 20s, and very soon found myself on the dance floor with Yakov and Susanna Darling-Kahn, who created movement medicine, which is this practice that we're speaking to through the lens of movement medicine in this particular session. So I've been dancing with movement medicine and interweaving the psychotherapy. I'm a psychotherapist also, and done a lot of training in somatic work and various forms of psychotherapy. So my practice interweaves the gestalt and the somatic way of working with movement and with how to connect with the health of life stream of nature inside, so that we can reconnect with the aliveness and the medicine of nature outside of us. So it's this interrelationality between the nature of ourselves, and I'll talk a little bit, I'll unwrap that a little bit more over our talk, and the medicine and the wisdom of nature in forests, in the trees, in the rivers, in the rain, in the oceans, in the mountains. So it has been a revelation for me to dance. I never really saw myself as a dancer, but it has been a revelation for me to experience dance as an immersion into the medicine of who I am, into the medicine of nature. That has been really key in my journey with movement as medicine, movement as meditation, movement as somatic experiencing. So there's been various studies about the power of nature. There's been various studies about our deep interrelationality with nature. And there's been various studies of the impact that being in nature has on our being. So lots of recent studies about immersion, say even 30 minutes going for a walk in a forest. What this creates after that threshold of 30 minutes being in a forest. Now, this doesn't mean being in a forest and being on the mobile phone. They've actually done studies about the difference between being connected to technology when you're in nature and without technology, when you leave your phone off or at home. And it's quite stark, the difference. So one of the differences is that when you're immersed in nature for 30 minutes, technology free, that the brain is saturated in theta brainwaves. So theta brainwaves are the waves that are conducive to meditation, to relaxation, to calmness, to connection. And the brain scans that were done on people that were immersed in nature for 30 minutes showed that the level of theta brainwaves far outweighed any of the other brainwaves that were in the brain. So the other brainwaves would be to do with activation, to do with a lot of stimulation in the brain that is in the prefrontal cortex. So what nature does, and I'll explain a little about how that works. So what nature does, say for example, you're in a forest. I'm sure you've heard the term forest bathing. So this is the Japanese term that was coined in the 80s by a biologist and a psychotherapist in Japan. And that term, shinrun yoku, that term of forest bathing, it is based on a lot of scientific research. So when you have time in nature and you're in the aromatherapy field of a forest, which is called phytoncides. So the phytoncides are pheromones and hormones and all these aromatherapy biological, it's a cloud in the forest that is emanated from the trees. And this aromatherapy or phytoncides, we breathe this in as we're in the forest, and this changes the brainwaves. This changes the rhythm of our breathing. This changes the rhythm of our heartbeat. So it has a profound effect on our nervous system, on our mental brainwaves, and on our heartbeat. And I'll explain why the heartbeat is important a little bit later on. In relationship to our nervous system and our capacity to feel grounded and connected and safe. So this is in relation to the polyvagal nervous system, which I'll explain a little bit later on. So how this works is it lowers the blood pressure. So being in a forest and with a forest for 30 minutes. Now, the important thing here is you have to do nothing else. Just be technology free. Walk a little bit or sit down in the forest. You have to do nothing else because you are breathing in the aromatherapy of the forest. So there's not a state of being you need to be in. This happens automatically through our biology. So you're breathing in this medicine of the forest, and it modulates your stress hormones. it increases the endorphins, all those goodies that we know about. It increases your serotonin levels. And this is really, this was fascinating that I found out recently. It actually increases the production of T cells in the body. So there's lots of research recently in Japan, and which is spreading out throughout the world about how being in a forest can actually increase your capacity to fight off cancer, because this aromatherapy cloud creates the conditions in our inner biology. I mean, that is pretty astounding, that creates the conditions to produce more T cells in the body, which are naturally cancer fighting cells. So this has developed into a new clinical discipline throughout the world and in Japan called forest medicine. And this is, I just want to read you a little extract from a book that I read recently called The Overstory by Richard Powers. It's a fascinating book and I highly recommend it. And this will just give a little bit of one thing that I would like you to come away with is this is starting to melt the delineation between humanness and nature and trees. So to recognize that we're more nature than we realize, and that nature, for example, trees are more sentient than we realize. So that there's an interrelationality that's a little less delineated than we have been told in the particular stories over the past number of generations from that threshold of the second agricultural revolution, when we started to move away from the song of nature, when we started to move away from the soil, when we started to move away from our relationship with nature that was really interwoven. So this is a little extract from that. I really, really could not recommend this book enough. We found that trees could communicate over the air and through their roots. Common sense hooted us down. We found that trees take care of each other. Collective science dismissed the idea. Outsiders discovered how seeds remember the seasons of their childhood and set buds accordingly. Outsiders discovered that trees sense the presence of other nearby life, that a tree learns to save water, that trees feed their young. Imagine that, they feed their young and synchronize their masts and bank resources and warn each other, warn their kin, and send out signals to wasps to come and save them from attacks. Here's a little outsider information, and you can wait for it to be confirmed. A forest knows things. They wire themselves up underground. There are brains down there. Ones our own brains aren't shaped to see. Root plasticity, solving problems and making decisions. Fungal synapses. What else do you want to call it? Link enough trees together and a forest grows aware. So I just love that from that book that I read recently. And this the fungal synapses is, I'm sure some of you know this, but trees are connected in a forest through the root system and also through that aromatherapy field. They speak to each other. And through the root system, they speak through the mycelium network, the mushroom network, through the roots of their trees to the other trees. They feed each other through this system. They feed each other. When one tree is weak, a stronger tree will feed another tree. When the eldest tree of a forest is about to die, it has all this pharmacology inside it. It has all these nutrients inside it that it has gathered sometimes over 1,000 years or longer. When you think of the mighty trees, when it's about to die, it releases all of its nutrients, all of its wisdom, all of its medicine in through the root system to the collective forest. And these trees are called giveaway trees. And I'm sharing this to, in a way, to bring some awareness to the conscious interrelationality between trees. And I'm sharing this as also a way to show the relationship between that nature of trees being in symbiotic relationship with other species, like the mycelium network, where the mycelium network, the mushroom network in the root system, is like a channel of communication between the roots of each of the trees. So they're in this symbiotic relationship, as we are, as humans, with the bacteria and the microbiome in the body. So there is more bacteria. If you were to extract it out, and there's more bacteria by weight and by mass in your own physical body, you have more bacteria in your body than human cells by tenfold. You have more beings in your system, microbial beings in your system, that are in symbiotic relationship with your human self. So there's more of them than there is of us. And we are in deep reciprocity with these microorganisms that are in the gut. If you think of there's so much of this wisdom that is revealing itself through the power of science, that is not so much a revelation, but more of a remembering, more of a waking up and remembering. Because if you think of the indigenous people, the Aboriginal people of Australia, they would see our system as reverse. So they see the gut as the main brain, and they see the heart as the second brain and the head as the third brain. So they have it in reverse. And if you see the latest developments about the power of the gut and the microorganisms that are in the gut that inform the nervous system, and the nervous system, which is central of the heart, and then that in turn informs how we think, how we feel. So it's a reverse understanding of our state of being. So that our state of being is seated in the gut, in that relationship, where that symbiotic relationship is really like a cauldron between our human self and the microbiome that lives very much in the gut. If you think of every single cell in your body, the powerhouse in each of your trillions of cells, the powerhouse of that is called a mitochondria. And what is the mitochondria? The mitochondria is a microorganism that we're in symbiotic relationship with. So this idea that we're separate embodied humans is beginning to melt a little bit. When you go down to the molecular level, when you go down to that level of seeing what's actually happening in the cells, it's the mitochondria that's transforming our food into energy, so that we can think, we can light up the synapses, the heart can beat over 100,000 times every day, the vascular system can move the waters through the body, that if you were to stretch out this vascular system, it would wrap around the earth 3.5 times. There's a vast network of waters of nourishment that is moving through the body, pumped by this heart that's beating over 100,000 times every day, and moved around the system by magnetic currents that are basically bringing energy that is created in the mitochondria, which is, if you want for a better word, a foreign body in the human self. So this is how intimately we are related to nature, down to the very, very tiny molecular level in the every cell, that there's a being that's separate from humans that is creating the energy for us to breathe, to live, to see each other here, to take in this information. So this is, as I said at the beginning, is nothing new. This is something that Indigenous people have known for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, this deep interweaving, this deep interrelationship with all of life. If you imagine a tree and the deep roots in the ground and that underground brain and the strong trunk and the branches that reach out to the sky, in the Lakota traditions, in the Sundance, they dance around a tree for 4 days and four nights to focus their prayers and their connection to a tree. And why do they do that? There's many reasons that are a mystery to me. I only know a very, very small amount about these practices. I've been going there for the past 6 years. I know very little. But from what I do know, one of the things is that's a symbol of the relationship between the material, the ground of the physicality that we're in, the material, the earth of our being, and the ethereal, that which is unseen, that which is in the ether. And in that book, The Overstory, one of the most fascinating things I read was that most of the material things we see, my laptop is on a wooden table here, and that's obviously from a tree. So there's if you look around you, you'll see, you begin to see that an awful lot of things come from, an awful lot of physical things, the root of these physical things in our world, they come from the process of photosynthesis. Photosynthesis is that capacity of plants, of trees, to create something from air, water, atmosphere, and that alchemical process of photosynthesis. So most of the physical things that you see, and we can trace our ancestry back to the plants, back to the trees, back to this process, alchemical process of photosynthesis. So that relationship between the ethereal, the energy of the air, the energy of the sun, the energy of water, and the physical things that we can touch, that's created through the process of photosynthesis. So this frame of reference that the Lakota use of that relationship between the earth and the ethereal, it's almost like science is catching up slowly, 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 little bit at a time with Indigenous wisdom about our rootedness in nature, about the deep relationship between the natural world and our own ecology, our own inner ecology, our own human natural self. We're not separate. This is Thomas Hubel. I don't know if you know this man. He's an extraordinary man. He spoke recently at the Collective Trauma Summit. And he's a fascinating man. I really encourage you to look him up. And he hit from his perspective, one of the ways that we can begin to work on our collective trauma, and his one of his frames of collective trauma is separation. Separation from the natural world, separation from the self, separation from each other. And one of the ways, that is one of the root causes, root effects of collective trauma as he sees it, is this idea that we can have the capacity to hurt each other in ways that create trauma due to the separation that we're experiencing, so that we don't have that empathic understanding of our deep interrelationality, our deep connection with each other. So one of the ways he offers as a remedy for a collective separation or collective trauma is to go back, to have an opportunity to just to go back far enough, let's say to the mid 18th century, to that time of the second agricultural revolution, where before that, we as humans, particularly in the Western world I'm speaking to right now, began that transition of separation from our real day-to-day immersion in nature. So he suggests to go back and connect with our ancestry, maybe four or five generations before. So that is before that threshold when we began this turning away from our day-to-day immersion in nature. So in America, this is just a study I saw recently. It's not in America, the average adult spends 95% of their time indoors. That's outstanding. But I would say that we are catching up with that in lots of different countries. So it's a really good idea to just take a moment and reflect, well, how much time a day do I spend in nature in relationship to how much time I spend indoors? And I think these questions are even more relevant in our times, and particularly what we're going through in our times, where there's a sense of moving inwards and a sense of, I know in Ireland, we've moved back to that what's called lockdown, which is a very interesting term, and where we're asked not to go 5 kilometers from our home, we're asked to be indoors. And so it feels more and more relevant to ask that question, how much time do I have technology-free in nature? How much time do I have in my average day? It was a question that was a little bit confronting for me to see the answer to that. But it also can open the inquiry about how to spend a little more time in nature. Now, it's so important to do. Let's take it from the perspective of the polyvagal nervous system. So the polyvagal nervous system is a really interesting frame or interesting way of looking at our human self. So we have a nervous system in the body that recently has been coined the polyvagal nervous system. Poly means wandering. So it's a wandering system of nerves. It's a bundle of nerves that, if you were to imagine it, it's like a system of a network of rivers in the body. So it goes into all the way up through the brain, into the eyes. It controls the muscles around the face. It actually can control how we hear, depending on how the nervous system, the state of being of the nervous system. So it can change the frequencies that we hear. So a solid example of that is if we're feeling stressed, then we will zone out human voice so that we can hear signs of danger. So say, okay, so the polyvagal nervous system is basically like a little story of our evolution. At the base of the polyvagal nervous system is the reptilian part of the nervous system. So we were reptiles, then we were animals and mammals, and formed into humans as part of the mammal tree of life. So at the base of the polyvagal nervous system is the dorsal vagal. Now, the dorsal vagal is key for two reasons. This is the seat of our capacity for relaxation. So our capacity to settle. So that holds that medicine, the dorsal vagal. I'll explain a little bit about how we can increase our capacity for that. It also is a place where we default into numbing out. So if you imagine a reptile, how do they survive in the wild? They're hunted, they pretend to be dead. So they go into that place where they keel over, pretend to be dead, so the hunter loses interest. Now, we still have this memory in our being, in that ancestral dorsal vagal part of the nervous system. So when, as humans, when we feel threatened, and that can be a real threat or it can be historical, where we imagine the same thing is happening again, we can default into the dorsal vagal survival mechanism. So that means that we shut down, we feel tired, we feel numbed out, we feel a lack of connection, we feel sleepy, we feel zoned out. So these are, if you experience this, this can sometimes mean that your system is overwhelmed and it's triggering a survival mechanism in the dorsal vagal nervous part of the nervous system. So the polyvagal nervous system goes into the pacemaker of the heart. So if we feel threatened and the dorsal vagal is activated, it can slow down our heartbeat. It can slow down our breathing. So this wandering nerve goes into all the organs. It goes into the heart, right into the pacemaker of the heart. And it goes all the way up into the prefrontal cortex and into the ears and all through the facial muscles. The second part, or the second evolutionary step, if you like, is the animal part of the nervous system, which is the mid part of the nervous system. And this part of the nervous system is related to fight or flight. So this was an evolutionary step in the number of choices we had for survival in nature. So when we feel stress or overactivated, or the nervous system is speeded up, or anxiety or insomnia, this can sometimes mean that the mid part of the nervous system, the animal part of the nervous system, is stimulated into a survival response. And that's good information, because there are ways that we can exercise the polyvagal system so that we can have a response that's more life-giving, more balanced, more healthy in a way. So this part of the nervous system is also to do with activation, our capacity to be in the world and interact and be active. So there, it's not as if these nervous systems are inherently bad for us. They're just ways that they've gone out of balance. And there, it's like sometimes we operate on old systems of understanding of where we are in our environment and our capacity to respond. Now, it gets really interesting when we come to the next evolutionary step in our biology, which is the ventral vagal part of the nervous system, which is the latest part of the nervous system to evolve. So if you even were to imagine your brain, so the base of the brain, you know, the shape of the brain, the base of the brain is the dorsal, is the reptilian part of the brain. The mid part of the brain is the animal brain, your capacity for fight or flight, or response to stimuli in a way that's more activating and more outgoing, if you like. The front part is the mammalian. And this is really interesting. The ventral vagal part of the nervous system, that evolved through our development of a pack, of kin, of being in packs, of being in a group of being in community, if you like. So one of the reasons this developed so strongly in terms of the facial muscles was so that we could read each other. We could communicate through our facial expressions. That's why the ventral vagal, that latest development of the nervous system, is so concentrated in the front part of the brain. It's very much to do with our capacity to be in connection. So when we feel safe and when we feel connected, that's a result of the ventral vagal system being alive and well. When we feel, when our nervous system gets overwhelmed, we regress back through our brain, but also our nervous system. So the ways to activate the ventral vagal part of the nervous system is through conditions and environmental situations where we feel safe and connected. So this can be, this part of the nervous system can be stimulated through, guess what, being in nature, being in a forest. And one of the reasons for this is, if you know, the ear is an unusual shape, right? It's quite an unusual shape, our ears. I listened to a talk there. I'll include a link to it. It's a talk by Krista Tippett and this extraordinary man who spent his whole life recording sounds of nature. And what he discovered through his years and years of going to different environments and recording nature, he got very fascinated about our hearing. He got very fascinated about the shape of our ears. Our ears are formed evolutionary, the biology and the shape of the ears formed, guess what, to amplify bird sound, to amplify bird song. So that it's a very particular shape that amplifies bird song. Why? Because when we were humans and hunter-gatherers, we would listen out for bird song. Why? Because that brought us to forests where there was shelter, where there was fruit, where there was wood for burning fires. So when we are in nature, when we are in that place of, I'm sorry, I am fascinated with trees. There's plenty of other places you can be, but I've always been fascinated with trees. And perhaps it's part of my Irish Celtic roots, because in the Celtic roots, the Om language, which is the original Celtic language, is based on each letter signifies a tree. So it's tree language or Entish language. And it's that language that you see on these standing stones where they have different strokes. And that is the language of trees. So they based their language on the alphabet of trees. And they had a system of royalty of trees, where there was a kingdom of trees. There was the ash, and there was the oak that were the royalty. They had seven kind of trees that were in the royalty of trees. And to cut down a tree had very, very serious consequences. So they recognized the sovereignty, the sovereign nature of trees, the sovereign nature of a forest. So perhaps that's why I'm a little fascinated with trees. So I'm aware of the time. I would like you to have a little immersive experience of this practice of movement medicine, and maybe bring a little different way of connecting with this power of the natural world. So what we'll do is we'll have a short, maybe, Antonina, have we got time for 10 minutes of this? Yeah, great, fantastic, okay, perfect. So you can sit down, you can stand up, you don't have to see the screen for this practice. So I'll put on a little music and I'll guide you. So you can have your eyes open or closed. You can have your screen on or off. You can stand up and move around the room. So we're going to have a 10-minute immersive practice. So good to, I'll just get ready, put the music on, and good to stretch and take a few deep breaths. That's another really key thing with the polyvagal nervous system, is to be conscious of your breathing. This brings the polyvagal nervous system online so that we can begin to create alchemical balance in our nervous system. So allow the exhale to be nice and deep, allow the diaphragm to work. This is really good for the nervous system. Great. So you can be standing, you can be sitting, take a few deep breaths, and just bring the focus of attention close to yourself. You could even stretch the hands right out into the space around you. So like mapping a circle all the way around you, in front of you, behind you, to the left and right. And bring your attention into that space in which you can stretch out. There's an electromagnetic field of the body and the heart that stretches out into the space around you. Electro, that of the sun, magnetic, that of the earth. Take a moment now to stretch out towards the sky and the sun. Make a simple connection with the sky and the sun. You can do this in your own way. Don't forget to breathe. This research in neuroscience has revealed that imagining and the power of the imagination is very close to the actual immersion, the actual experience of doing something. So that relationship between imagining can open up and fire up the synapses of the brain and create the conditions to have an imminent experience and to really build the muscles of connection with nature. Beautiful. So let the hands come down towards the earth. Make a simple connection with the living earth beneath you. Imagine the brain of trees beneath the earth, the mycelium network that is alive and well under this living earth, within this living earth. Take a moment to feel your own connection through your feet to whatever part of your being is in physical connection with the earth. And take a minute now, through simple movement and through simple intention to connect that relationship between the earth and the sun and the sky. So you could raise your hands up towards the sky and the sun and imagine the sun rays coming down through the body to nourish the roots. And in turn, allowing these roots, like a tree, to rise up through the body to nourish the heart. And just let the body melt into motion as you do so, giving yourself permission to move freely and fluidly, just like the waters. Imagining this vast network of rivers through the body, through the heart, through the mind, through the tissue of the body. Into motion, move hands, elbows, shoulders, head, backbone. Connecting with the waters, the rivers, the rain, the oceans. Recognizing yourself as part of this wider web of nature. Imagining yourself breathing in those phytoncides, the aromatherapy of a forest, as you allow the body to breathe, to expand and contract. In the lungs, the alveoli are like branches of a tree that spiral inwards and outwards in this alchemical dance of receiving and letting go of nourishment and what's no longer needed. Take another 2 minutes just to let the body move, let the body breathe, let the body move like water, like wind. Perhaps even traveling back in time to time through the ancestral lineage where we were more intimately immersed in nature. Another minute, and if you will, find a simple gratitude for some aspect of nature, a river, tree, forest, or some place that you feel connected to. Thank you. a few breaths. And gently bringing this to completion. And just before we complete, just in your mind's eye, have a place in nature where you, that you know of, that you feel connected to. And feel the nourishment that you receive from being in that particular place in nature. Let's come and sit together again.
Thank you, David. It was an amazing exploration and nature connection. That is amazing. And you can now, all the participants, you can say something in the chat to... How was that for you? And we are inviting you to continue the conversation with David in our Facebook group. I collected your questions. We don't have time for questions at the moment, but please do follow the link to our Facebook group. And under this live stream post, I will post all your questions so David can answer them there. Or you can, yeah.
Thank you. There was one question about what the music is. So thank you. Someone's posted that. You can buy the music. It's Jakob and Susanna Darling Khan who created that music. And you can buy it. And their facilitations are also on that.
Yeah, also you can come back to this exploration and listen once again to an amazing polyvagal theory from David on this recording for 48 hours. It will stay for free, and then it will be available in our library. Don't forget to check it. There are lots of different interesting sessions, and also we have a separate channel on the ecology and nature connection, so maybe for those who are exploring this nature source for the first time, you can find more in the channel of nature connection. And to wrap up this session, we have a question that we ask all of our speakers, and we are collecting the quotes from speakers to one book. And David, question is for you. What is your top embodiment tip how to stay connected to the body?
Take 10 minutes every day to be in nature.
Yeah, I guess that you will say something about nature. Thank you, David. Thank you for nice for me start of the day, and thank you for all of participants for joining us. And let us stay connected. Let us.
Antonina, can I just quickly say for that? There's a few questions about classes and stuff. So. Sure. embodiment.ie is my website, and I do online individual classes, and also you can have a 6-week journey for these kinds of explorations with a small groups of people where we meet once a week over 6 weeks online, and it's a beautiful way to connect. I've been doing this for a good few months now, and it's a very, very beautiful way to connect. So you can find all the information on embodiment.ie.
Cool. So let's stay connected as trees and enjoy our days. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thanks, Antonina. Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, folks. Thanks, Anton. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, David.
Bye-bye, Tandy. Bye-bye.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, Anna.
Bye. Thanks, Anna.